Hey, Mac, when does deer season start?
Well, if you want the best deer herd possible, Lanny, you need to start right now.
Right now.
That's why we're starting our promotion. I mean, we've got a Deer Season Starts Now promotion on plantbiologic.com where you can pick up our Game Changer soybeans, our forage soybeans, and our spring protein peas. While you're there, you might as well go ahead and pick up some brassicas like our final forage and winter bowls.
Yeah, stock up for the cool season planting right now. Listeners to the GK Podcast, if you use coupon code GKPOD, you can save an additional 10% off our entire selection of warm season, cool season, and clover food plot seed. Get started today and visit plantbiologic.com for an unforgettable fall.
I am Jeff Foxworthy, and welcome to Gamekeeper Podcast. If you want to learn more about farming for wildlife and habitat management, then buddy, you are in the right place. Join the Gamekeeper crew direct from Mossy Oak Land Enhancement Studio as they discuss the latest wildlife and habitat management practices, news, and of course, hunting. There's no telling what you'll learn, but I'm going to tell you, I bet it's interesting. Enjoy.
5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
All right, guys, here we are once again, West Point, Mississippi. We are going to talk about box calls today.
Ooh, yeah.
Looking at Toxie.
Bobby Box Call.
Hey, man.
I've sat in the dark with everything, with waking up listening to Bobby Call on the box.
He loves to yelp at him early.
He does.
Yeah, yeah. Especially that box call.
I love a box
call. Would you think the box call was one of the first turkey calls? I don't know.
Had to be. Well, so let me introduce ourselves.
Yeah, my bad. I was jumping all the way up in it.
We've got Lyle Gilbert from Houndstooth Calls.
In the house. Yes, sir.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Glad to have you over there.
Awesome. Thank you. You got a
neat brand. That's a neat name.
Yeah. Bobby loves that Houndstooth hat and that whole
thing. Yeah, he's a Houndstooth kind of guy all the way around.
He is. Tuscaloosa, Alabama. Yeah,
that's right. Bobby is such a big fan of the Crimson Tide.
Oh, my goodness.
I know. I understand. It's all right. It's all right. I appreciate it.
But it is a great name.
Thank you.
Yeah, it is.
Thank you. It's catchy. You'd be surprised at how many people don't catch on to it. They're like, and they're from Alabama. They go, Houndstooth, Game Calls, where are you from?
Turkey hunting Houndstooth. Where do you think
Bola
I'm from?
No.
Yeah. Uh-oh.
No, is that where you're from? It's Bola G?
No, Tuscaloosa.
Okay.
You're getting kind of close over there. Careful.
Bola G Cafe.
You better stay yourself over in Greene County.
I am a Sumter County boy.
Oh, my gosh.
Are you really?
Yeah, all my family's from Livingston.
Oh, wow.
Sure. Wait a minute.
There's a direct connection between Livingston.
I want you to stand up and face away from me. I'll see if I've seen you before in the woods.
Negative. I do. Look, you would catch me because I don't run. You just have me. No. Yeah, Livingston and Belmont.
Yeah.
Oh, good. You're on a safe side of town out there.
And look, this will throw you a good one. I married a doll.
Oh, okay.
Oh, that my gosh. There's more dials than Smiths in Sumter County.
Well, my wife's side is more cattle.
Cattle.
Could you give us permission to hunt on the dial property?
No, I couldn't.
Oh, okay. Well, I
wished I could.
Is there some property you could give us?
Anywhere.
Yeah. I'm that part and Scuba, Mississippi. That's mm-hmm. that's home to me.
That's right awesome.
There, Livingston.
Long line of turkey hunters from back then. Mm-hmm.
It is.
No doubt.
That explains a lot.
It does.
It really does.
Yeah. Well, look.
That's God's country. I'll say that for it. That's my. If Bobby didn't make me be here today, I would be there today.
Yeah. All right, let's get serious here for a second. We were talking about box calls.
Yeah.
Wow, give us a little history of the box call.
Man, box calls, of course, you know, me growing up, my history started with turkey hunting with my father, and that would be M.L. Lynch on my side. Mm-hmm. And
I have one of those from my dad.
Exactly. And that single-sided Lynch box. Mm-hmm.
I've
listened to my dad tell stories about getting on his bicycle and bicycling into the town right there in Livingston. And Mr. Lynch would come through, I guess, at a hardware store there, and he'd buy those boxes. And so that's kind of where box calls, you know, that I know the most of as far as history goes, started there. I mean, in the South, it was Lynch.
Mm-hmm.
That's right.
And there's the Lynch box that I've got now. I've used it so much, you can see my thumbprint on the outside of it, where I always held it. That, you know?
Right.
So, that single sided box to me is It was king in the South here.
Yeah, synonymous with Turkey Hunt.
I have a box. It's actually two-sided. And about 5 or 6 years ago at Christmas, I opened this box wrapped kind of funky, and it was from Daddy. And it was my grandfather's, who I'm named for, which I never knew, died the day after I was born. And it was a box call that he turkey hunted with from 1934.
Wow.
And it'll make a turkey sound. It's not great. I guess you could chalk it up.
Was it a Lynch?
No, but it was not a Lynch. The thing about it, there were box call people way before Lynch.
Yeah.
But he was the pioneer of precision making them for milling the public them, right? And selling them.
Yeah.
To the best I know. But there, and you know, Daniel took a picture, sent it to one of these historians, and he immediately told him, that's a such and such. Oh, my gosh, that's a such. And I remember hearing the name before. So if you can think of some of the other early box call makers, but I can't remember the name.
I'm sitting here drawing a blank on one, but Primo's did a remake of a box. Gibson.
It wasn't a Gibson. It was a Gibson.
That may be before.
Turpin.
Could be a Turpin. Mm, I've got a Turpin.
Have you hunted with it?
No, I have not.
Have you thought about taking
it? Yeah, but I'm so scared to take it out. It's in the gun safe down there. It's cool. I don't want to get it out. I'll bring it back. Oh, my gosh, everybody, look at that thing. I'm scared of something to happen to it.
Yeah.
I don't know what the origins are. My point in saying that, and I know in that same time frame that Mr. Fred Stimson and a guy named Jim Ratcliffe Jim Ratcliffe was making his own mouth calls, and they were in a big competition all the time. That's before. And I think that was probably in the 30s, too, when it was the mouth call. They were hand-making them way back then. So the origins of the box have to go way before that.
Oh, yeah. I wouldn't doubt that at all.
But, I mean, you know, a historian at the Turkey Federation would probably be the one to tell us.
And we need to look into that.
So, Lyle, how did you get into the call-making business?
I started off, I was a guide. I actually ran a farm in Scuba. Down at Shyhamet Creek, I know Chris Crow
very well. We all know him.
Well, yeah. Chris is like one of my best friends. I started there when I got out of junior college, and we were, you know, guiding hunters and whatnot. And I got a little older. And
so, then, for the record, that's not Scuba. That's Wahalak.
That's right. That is Wahalak.
That's a suburb of Scuba.
That's right, suburb of Scuba. And anyway, I met my wife and ended up moving towards Tuscaloosa, and the guy that when we bought this house and moved in, this older gentleman, Mr. Maddox, he came over there and we got to be friends. He loved to turkey hunt, but he was a master woodworker. Hmm. And I was like, let's make some turkey calls. And that's literally how it started.
Huh.
You know, was just tinkering around with tube calls and pot calls and, you know, and then a few box calls and later on, I ended up building mouth calls, and heck, now I'm doing them every day. So
that's awesome. Good for you.
Yeah. Thank you. I appreciate it. It's been a journey, I've enjoyed every bit of it.
You know, that's cool.
I love to hear that, because the time is the most important thing when you spend it doing something you love.
So the box call is it a big part of Houndstooth's offering?
Yes, it is. It's becoming more of an offering, you know, as far as like what we're doing. I've got a couple things that you know, we just talked about Lynch. I have such a love for that single-sided box.
Mm-hmm.
I'm probably fixing to put out a single-sided box for next season.
Good for you.
It's got a distinct sound that's what it's, you know, there's no other box going to have that same sound.
Let me make a suggestion for you. So Lynch had the foolproof.
That's
correct. You could have the Lanny proof.
The Lanny
proof.
I think it'd be a good
thing. It would cost him too much to make it out of carbon steel, though, Bobby.
Carbon steel. No, I guess they're saying that you destroy it pretty quick.
I guess so. I guess
pretty rough on stuff.
Pretty rough on stuff. That's for sure.
Me and you see eye to eye. There we go. The same way.
Yeah.
Well, to get back serious, don't you think, whether you're a beginner or you're a seasoned expert like Carrie sitting over here on this other couch, a box call has a place in your vest.
It does. I love a box call. You know, a lot of times I won't start out in the mornings early with it, but when we get to about 8:30, 9 o'clock, and I've been on a turkey and I hadn't worked out, and I'm gonna walk, that's what first thing I'm gonna hit.
Mm-hmm.
Just sliding, just easing through.
If I was forced to have one, it would be a box, personally.
Everybody got quiet.
A box is versatile if you'll learn to run it different ways. Mm-hmm. Because everybody normally, when you hear them running a box, they got it, you know, lid on top, mm-hmm. right there, and they're doing it like that. There's so many different ways you can hold that box.
Just right.
If I want, like, really a lot of control and I'm going to sit down and actually call the turkey, I will hold it just like this.
So what he's doing, you can't see him. He's actually the body of the box. The bottom is the lid. See, right. He is running the body, and the lid is stationary. So he's running it opposite of what people do. Correct. And I've done that before, and it does give you more control. When you get old and your hands are shaky.
It gives you – and you can bring that volume back down just by taking that. See, I'm rolling it over. I'm getting two mm-hmm. notes besides sitting there taking it. And I cannot get that control like I want it. But, man, when I take it and sit it down, and then I can sit to a turkey.
Mm-hmm. Well, that sounds good.
So it's pretty neat. Pretty neat little – it's very
– Bobby is wishing before this day started that he would have made a deal with all of y'all. Whatever call you run on air, you're going to leave it here for me.
Except Josh.
I didn't want to. No, you don't want Josh's call.
Yeah, Josh's mouth calls. You're right. Yeah. You try to get me to take them.
Yeah.
So that's not a real big box.
Is that y'all's Dixie Hen? Which one is that?
It is. It's the Dixie Hen. It has a mahogany body and purple heart.
Actually, that combination right there, I've had one for so long.
Look, I'm telling you that. In the call building world, I started off using with this particular box, walnut for the body and pecan for the lid. And you would get a pecan lid and that, you know, I'd be stuffing them to the side going, oh, that's going to be perfect. And the pretty ones, they all sounded horrible. And there wasn't no saving them. It was just, you know, it had that spalt through it. But anyway, that's the most consistent wood I have ever found.
Mm-hmm. Say that again. It's got a
mahogany, purple heart.
Mahogany and purple heart, excuse me. But it's very consistent on its yield when we're building box cars. Uh-huh. I don't have near the duds. They're awesome.
Yeah, but the purple heart is that he's talking about an efficiency thing, but they sound great.
Yeah, it's and the sound is top notch.
It really is.
What kind of tree is a purple heart?
Look, you're going to have to...
Dudley?
Hit that Google button over there.
I'm about to look it up.
Let me ask the tree guy.
Whoa.
It's not...
Dudley does not know what
it is. I only know the natives. You know, that's probably some kind of tropical...
It's South American, I think. I think that is exactly
okay, we're going to give Dudley a pass.
Quick to the fan.
I'm Googling it.
Bobby Dudley say if you'll send him on a field trip to South America, he'll learn that one too.
Dendro.
Yeah.
You know, like mahogany, there's different species.
That's right. There's different species worldwide.
That
right.
are yep. called.
Yep.
So.
Yep.
Well, I tell you what, it's pure purple.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Well, even purple heart, a lot of lids that you'll find, it'll have a brownish tint and won't mm-hmm. be quite as purple. But, yeah. mm-hmm. but
That's a great box call.
It's neat.
I've always done like him. He's speaking just like my playbook almost. And I don't think like it's smart to do this or that. It's just something that kind of comes to you, but once I've you know, at first daylight, I'm probably most of the time on mouth call, pot call,
mm-hmm.
but for what some other reason I've always liked, and there's a little, you know, strategy behind it. When I'm easing around trying to strike one up in the morning, I almost always have used a box call, not a tube call or even loud on my. One thing I've always liked to do is if I strike a turkey with one call, I want to be able to switch to another call when I start working him.
Exactly.
So for me, I'd like to strike him on the box call and not use my mouth calls. That's primarily what I would use working him. But then if I'm I don't know why I do this, but up in the morning I feel more comfortable as my second call. You know, I said before, I like to sound like two different hens. I'll be running a box call with a mouth call up in the morning, and I don't know why, but for some reason I just grab a pot call to do that at daylight.
That is exactly what I do.
And so my security blanket is having that one side of box I have, and it's the purple heart mahogany combination just like that. And I can't even tell you how many thousands of times I've yelped trying to strike a turkey with it.
Your daughter's been begging you to hunt since her little brother shot the big 8 last year. You've ran a fire, dissed the fields, got stuck, got unstuck. Planted food plots, fertilized, and prayed for rain. You moved trees, limbed roads, He even bought one of those fancy cell cameras.
So what's your excuse?
LS Tractor.
Moultrie has pioneered the game management category. Today, Moultrie is one of the best-selling brands of feeders and seeders in the world, and they continue to innovate with new technology that gamekeepers will rely on. Moultrie products are always field-tested and designed for hunters by hunters, combining forward-thinking innovation with time-tested practicality. Moultrie, first in feeders since 1979. All right, so guys, Moultrie is offering our listeners a 15% site-wide discount at MoultrieFeeders.com. Use code MossyOak with a capital M, MossyOak, at MoultrieFeeders.com and get that 15% discount. Tell us about all the different kind of calls you can make on the box.
You can pretty much all the way from clucks and purrs down to, you know, any kind of assembly yelps, tree yelps. You can even gobble on it. Now, at this box, I actually, when I built this box, I don't gobble at turkeys. I have friends that gobble and they love it, and that's what they do. But this box here, I wanted a box that would stay quiet without a piece of white paper in it.
Mm-hmm.
So when you sit it down there, if you notice it doesn't really make any noise. It has to come up here to activate it. Another box, when you, most of the other boxes, you're already starting to get sound back mm-hmm. and forth. Mm-hmm. So I never meant for this thing to really be like a gobble box. But all the other stuff from cutting, you know, you can do it all.
Yeah, let's hear you do some stuff on
it. Let's do some cutting on it. It's pretty simple. I'll let that weight of that lid, that way it's just sitting there and my hand just rests right there.
His thumb on it, everybody.
That's right.
Yep.
So
holding almost straight up and down.
You know, yelps. If I'm going to walk around, a lot of times, like we were talking about walking and striking, I'm gonna burn some chalk on it.
There you go. Beautiful.
Cut a few times.
Yes.
Listen, you know, purrs, you can take your thumb, put it to the side, and just kind of. You'll figure out your own little technique. That's the cool thing about a box. Everybody runs something a little different.
Mm-hmm.
Sit down to a turkey. I'm going to flip it around like we were sitting here with Toxics talking about just the control. If I want to get loud with it too, it has a little different kind of tone to it mm-hmm. when you flip it over.
Mm-hmm.
It's you know, everything does something with a turkey call, whether it be a pot or a box.
So how do you figure out what side of that box is one side going to sound better or different than the other?
I tell you, when we're tuning them, one side, generally to me, to my ear, always, when, and maybe we shouldn't say it sounds better than the other, it sounds more natural to my ear because I've probably heard a hen that matches one of those sides.
Mm.
But this box is, this wood is so consistent, just like what we were talking, it's... Yeah.
Well, a lot of it is it's hard to be ambidextrous.
Yeah.
So I just, one side, I just, it's more natural for
that's
me.
That's right.
And I struggle going the other way.
I know on the old Lynch's World Champion, it said, you know, this side imitates a hen, this side imitates
that's
a gobbler.
Right.
I remember my dad swapped sides on it and always ran the gobbler side, and it sounded like a great hen.
And what they did to do that was varied the thicknesses of the walls.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Uh-huh.
Which gave it pitch differences. Mm. You know, a gobbler yelp or a hen yelp.
What about that chalk? Is there that's a special chalk, isn't it?
Yeah, well, it's wax free, resin free. Blue chalk, and maybe it's me on this, but and I've had plenty of customers tell me it's something about that blue chalk, and I get that way back from putting blue chalk on. And I was taught you put that blue chalk on that Lynch box, and not brown chalk, not white chalk. And there was companies selling brown and white chalk. But I can tell you when we're tuning them, I can put brown chalk on it and I can put blue chalk on it. And I can tell, it might be a smidge, but I can tell it. You may not be able to tell it, but I can tell it just something about blue chalk and box calls. It just, I don't know, the sound that I get from it, that's what I've always loved.
I got the wrong colored chalk.
That might be your problem.
Yeah.
But it's you. I mean, it's not chalk that you can just go buy anywhere. It's
no. It in some places. I mean, there's all kinds of manufacturers of chalk. The biggest thing about buying chalk, just buying it from, you know, say a place that's more along the lines of an industry, you know, like right. that they have a railroad or stuff like that. You don't know what the additives are in it. So, yeah. But yes, this is a formulated chalk for this box. Or for what we do.
You know, I listened to that. It reminded me of something, and I had a higher-pitched box call at the time. But so I don't know if there's truth to it or not. I didn't even ask Ball just about this. But Harold Knight, who might as well be one, he just said he always had some calls towards the end of the season that were higher-pitched. And I was like, why that? Because he was using a high-pitched box. And that would do it. All you had to do was pull down on the lid a little more. And I said, why? He said, well, the hens that are left to breed late in the season most of the time are younger hens, like a year olds and stuff.
Hmm.
And so he said a lot of times a higher pitch call really turned one on late in the season. Because I don't know if it's true. I mean, honestly, I'm not negating anything he would ever tell me. But I will say a few times I kind of remembered what he said and tried that. It seemed like it did make a difference.
That's funny you said that, and you may know this fellow, Toxie. Did you ever know a guy named Jerry Gardner from Harpersville, Alabama?
I did.
Heart of Dixie game call.
Oh yeah,
he was one of the best turkey hunters I ever got to turkey hunt going with, and as a kid, and that was one of the things that he told me all the time. Just what you said,
mm-hmm.
those younger hens, late season, they're the leftovers. That's what you want to sound like.
The way he presented, he said, you know, that's the same way we hear that about does. Sometimes that, you know, a month after the peak rut, there's a kind of a secondary, and sometimes that's the yearling does mm-hmm. that come in. It's an old wives' tale, but that's what I've always heard. And he was saying the same thing happens with these young hens. They have a lot higher pitch or not deep and raspy, you know.
Yeah.
I don't know.
What about a paddle box? What can you tell us about that?
You know, paddle boxes, you get that a lot. Of course, they're a lot longer usually.
Well, they'll cut and carry.
They'll cut and carry. They're a higher pitch. I've seen a lot of people do, you know, kiki on them a little bit easier than mm-hmm. these shorter type mm-hmm. boxes. Usually have a narrower lid mm-hmm. too as
Real
well.
Real thin.
Yeah, and that's something I've got several that, you know, I've just never jumped off into that. Now, I'm very minimal mm-hmm. person when I'm taking stuff in the woods. I don't want to have a whole lot, but I used to keep one on the dash of my truck for just riding around checking turkeys and stuff.
On a windy day.
Mm-hmm. I'd do it on a steel day, find one in another county with it.
Yeah, they can reach out, that's for sure, but they're kind of bulky too.
They are. That's why I always kept it on the truck, right there on the dash. Mm-hmm.
What do you put in your box when it's in your vest to keep it from squeaking and making noise?
Generally, if it's any other box than this, I usually just have a rubber band on this just because it doesn't make a whole lot
of
racket.
That's a great feature.
But like with my old Lynch box, I've always got a paper towel in there wrapped up just like my
toilet paper.
Toilet paper.
Nothing fancy.
Toilet paper.
When I stick my leftover, I've had extra glove in there. I'll stick that in there sometimes because I'm so tired of it. Squawking mm-hmm. every time. It's funny. It used to be the best cluck I ever made was when you bumped your box call by mistake.
Yeah.
I wish I could do that on purpose.
Yeah.
Wow. Well, what else about box calls are we not asking you?
Well, I think we've covered this, but this is a box call right here from a different era in time.
Look at that thing.
Wow. I wish we could show that to people.
What's that guy?
And the cool thing about that is that
– Looks like a miniature steamboat.
That's right. It is a box, but it's also friction, peg, and slate. It has a peg in it.
So what do you call that?
Well, it is originally called a success call made by Mr. Ernest Black.
Wow.
And he hunted the Raleigh area over there, Raleigh's Lake area over there in Wahala.
Mm-hmm. How about that?
For years. And it was, from what I understand, I had one of these growing up, but I didn't know where it came from because the guy wouldn't tell me where he got it for me. Mm-hmm. But anyway, I lost it and time came around. George Mayfield came to my shop and he said, "Do you see this?" And I was like, "Oh my gosh, that's that same call." And that's where we figured out. And I didn't realize he actually hunted next door to me. That's how that guy got that But anyway, we have to give him the credit of that. And I talked to his grandson. I said, I'd love to make them if you didn't mind. And I'd love to call it the success call. So giving him a little credit on it. But anyway, it is a neat little collar. You run it just like a box.
Hmm. That's actually almost a very turkey.
Yeah. Woody.
Very turkey.
Take it, put it in your hand.
You know, but it almost has the bubble cluck for you, Bobby.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It sure does.
Look,
that's impressive.
You can take anybody in that can run it. Pretty neat little collar.
It's got Slate in there.
It almost sounds like
it. But this is what will blow your mind. Like the box that George gave me to remaster this, it had like a crack right here. It had check marks from, I'm assuming, dead turkeys. Mm-hmm. Anyway, and it sounded just like this one, brand new. And the thing about it is that you never sand it. You have to sand a slate all the time or buff it, you know, to keep it from your peg. This one here, I've never had to take one loose.
Mr. Where's the slate part?
It kind of sounds, we were talking about
thank
jet.
You so much.
Yeah. It kind of sounds like a jet. Slate.
Growing up in that era that we were talking about, I love a Lynch jet.
Mm-hmm.
I was just going to say that. Look inside of it, Dudley.
Yeah, Mr. George had one of these when we had him on the first time. He brought one and was after we got off air.
Well, George is the one that reintroduced me back to it and. I did the research on that, and that's, I mean, George is the one that pretty much explained to me where that thing came from.
Yeah, that's cool.
What?
I love seeing the old come back in the new.
Dudley, you're natural. You might
could kill one.
You shamed Lanny with the yipping on that thing, man.
How dare you?
That's neat, isn't it?
That is really neat.
Thing is cool about that. That might be good for the
youngins.
Yeah, the early user, because it's got a lot less room for error than maybe just a regular box.
Look at that. Bobby even sounds somewhat good on it.
Bobby, your bubble clucks sounds awesome.
I got one of these.
Of course he does.
Well, he's a collector. He's got some cool stuff. I know he does.
Of course he does.
Bobby's trying to bribe you out of your pet one.
No.
So
I'm saying I've got one of those.
I know you do now.
I don't need.
No wonder you hadn't said a word this whole time.
Yeah, that's a great little call.
That is cool.
So none of y'all knew that, did you?
No,
I've never even seen the one you've had.
Lenny, there's so much about me that you don't know.
I don't believe that.
And y'all hunt together all the time.
Yeah, I've had to do things. I have to turn around over here and do
that. They hunt together all the time. And Lanny is the last person who's going to know what's going on in Bobby's turkey woods.
I promise you one thing. If you hunt with Bobby, you need to let him sit down first. You never let him take his direction on where to sit.
Oh, I know. I don't want to get into that today. We've got a guest over here.
Yeah, you're right.
Lyle, it's embarrassing.
Look, yeah, true turkey hunters right here.
That's right.
Yeah. We're all friends till turkey
100%.
Season.
100%. And then everybody's lying.
It becomes warfare.
Yeah. He did me wrong one morning.
One morning.
Hey, look.
Make
so
up for the 10
you did it a bunch
that.
Of times. So I took them both. I got to just take 2 minutes or less. I took them both. It was late in the season, and Lanny still hadn't killed a turkey. Bobby had just killed one the day before over at like the dummy line somewhere. But hey, you know, neither one of them had just a super good year. But especially Lanny, let's go get him a turkey, Bobby. I know where should be a couple gobbling, and we'd get down there. And they were there, but they had moved.
Matter of fact, we were like going, and we invited Bobby just to tag along.
Yeah. I said, Bobby, come on.
Yeah.
So
felt sorry for him.
Ended up on the other side across a bunch of backwater. We waited over there. We got set, struck them, and they were smoking hot. They were a bunch of 2-year-olds. It was late in the season, no hens around. And I just said, yo, get up there. Get set. They're coming. And I just dive in behind them, calling, they're closer. Boom! And I see a turkey go down, and I jump up, and I go out there, and then I see Bobby on the turkey. I said, Bobby, I thought we were taking Lanny. Well, I know, but I mean, I had a shot, and I think they were leaving, and whatever like that. So anyway, Bobby's sitting there holding the turkey, and Lanny walks up, and he's got his lip kind of trying to be a good sport, poked out, and I said, Bobby, don't you feel bad? He goes, nope, not at all.
Not at all. Turkey hunting is war.
Good times.
So that's why Lanny said, let him sit down first, then you can cut him off.
That's exactly right.
Yeah, we've had a lot of fun in
there. Oh, my gosh.
That is funny.
They have. We have.
I've got a box call question.
Oh, there you go.
Okay.
So I'm always scared to try to adjust a box call for fear that I'll never be able to get it back to where it was. Should I just mess with it and tighten the screw or loosen the screw, or
every box call that I have ever owned, I've always tuned it to my ear. You don't want to compress it where it's like that the screw heads all the way down. Just get it, you can get it firm, but just where you can take it. And what it's going to do is the lower that lid is, it's going to end up making it a actually clear Yelp. And as you bring it out, you're going to start adding the back end of the Yelp, that back, that last part of it where it get that rasp. Mm-hmm. And then once you get it to kind of where you want it, some people have an ear and they like a clear sound. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So there's plenty. I wouldn't be afraid of that.
Hey guys, Dudley from Gamekeepers here. I want to tell you about the all-new Gunner Dog Bowl. It's designed for home and built for travel. It's customizable, leak-resistant, light on weight, solid on durability, and rust-proof. Like other Gunner products, they're made in Nashville and designed for everywhere. And then also, is there ever a time when you need to like recondition the lip or the sides of the call with like sand it or?
Normally, if I hit these sides, you could take some 120 and just scuff it, not work it back and forth. Just hit it a time or two and leave it alone. Sometimes the lid, it's going to get, you'll open your box and it'll be real slick right there where it's, hitting the rails on the call. And just take that 120. Some people say go left or right across it. I've always gone
right
with the grain.
I call it north and south.
Yeah. The grain, like all the grains on all the lids I've ever looked at were running north and south.
Yeah, that's the way it should. That's the way I will sand it. And I don't, I don't keep it in one spot. I try to, move it around. You don't want to take any of the curvature off of it. But you also doesn't have to, You're not going to change it by doing what you're talking about, as long as you're not just sitting there on that curvature dead center.
Okay.
But I do it all the time to them. So, I can understand where somebody that just hasn't ever done it is kind of scared to mess up the call. And
I've done it to a bunch of them, Dudley, and I wasn't scared. But what I found was I could get it right back like it was, but I would also find that something I liked any better was very close to what it already was. It wasn't much up or down.
Okay. No fear.
I wouldn't worry about it.
And then as far as chalking it goes, do you just chalk it before you leave the truck or do you chalk it every other week?
Chalking it is just kind of a thing of feel. You'll know when it, because doesn't play quite right.
It seems like every 2 or 3 days
That's right. But this wood holds chalk so well. It seems like I don't have to chalk this one as much as I did like the
Had, I mean, even though you just, even without the chalk, it seemed to still sound good.
That would probably depend on the species of wood and the grain.
Species of wood and the way you run it and just the,
So I looked up Purple Heart and I hope I'm getting the pronunciation, but the genus is Peltogeny. There's 19 species in that genus.
Oh my God.
There's one called Peltogeny purpurea that I wouldn't doubt just by the name of it.
That sounds right.
But it's in the pea bean family. It's Fabaceae.
Huh.
And so, we've got a local wood called Redbud that has a really pretty colored heartwood. I know they're not even in the same genus, but it does have that pretty color.
Oh, yeah.
But, that Purple Heart reminds me of the old growth sweet gum that they used to call red gum.
Mm-hmm.
And some of the old timers will tell you about it, but it has a very similar color.
Hmm.
That's a real dense wood, too.
Right? It's very, very dense.
Yeah.
I don't know where it sits on the Janka scale, but I know, Janka scale of hardness.
Yeah.
I never heard of that scale.
But speaking of that hardness, have you ever made one out of Bodock?
It's like a specific gravity.
I've never made a box call out of Bodock, but I have made tube calls, and that's, you got to have carbide tip.
It'll make a good striker.
Generally, cutting up the blank is worse than turning it. Trying to get getting it where it's a 1x1 and that, it, I mean, you're going to ruin
is
saw
that
blades.
Is that the most cantankerous wood you've ever worked with?
It is cantankerous. I mean, that stuff splits too. It dries, and yeah. I mean, it's when you get a good piece of it and it's dry, and it, you know, that somebody's taking care of it, and the ends, putting wax on it, and right. letting it properly dry. Man, it makes a heck of a turkey call. I know some friends that make pot calls out of it. Mm-hmm. But I've always,
that's a labor of love there.
Yeah,
though.
I've always made like trumpet calls, stuff like that.
Small pieces.
Yeah, small pieces, air driven pieces. Makes an awesome tube call.
Yo, Osage Orange.
Oh yeah, and it always I usually do like a run of owl hooters every so often in Osage, and they start off, they look like gold, and then they turn that dark,
yeah, they oxidize.
Brown. That's right.
Yeah. And I was reading the same about Purple Heart. If you treat it, it will brown up if you
cherry,
don't treat it.
Cherry will do the same thing in a Friesian call. It'll get dark, you know, darker. But yeah, I guess I always said that's Sumter County's exotic wood.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure.
There's a bunch of it.
You ain't kidding.
And Osage, Bodock, horse apple.
Yeah, yeah. Edge. When you say horse apple to somebody, they go, "What are you talking about?"
So, yeah, Osage Orange, but Bodock's, Boise Arc. I know for historians' sake, I know there's old fence rolls with Bodock.
Yeah,
fence post. And I asked probably 20 years ago, my Uncle Bud. He said at that time they were over 100 years old, and they were just as solid as
they are. And they don't rot.
Oh, yeah.
But what's cool is you can dig up some of those old fence posts.
Mud cured.
And they have an iridescence, almost like you're looking at turkey feathers. But it's almost green.
Wow.
So it doesn't rot, but it changes colors.
They call it mud cured in the call making community. Mud cured Osage.
So it's just the bottom of that fence post.
The bottom of that fence post.
You talk about dense. It is so dense. It'll eat up a chainsaw blade.
It is like iron.
Silica.
So, yeah, you see sparks.
Yeah.
How about that?
What else about a box call can you teach us?
Well, I'll tell you, I think one of the things where people might go that they can make their box calling go to a different level is how they hold the box. You know, I see a lot of people, they'll come to a show and they'll grab that thing and they're killing the sound. Yeah. You know, the whole point of that is vibration. So that's why I want to get just it's sitting there where I can control it. And instead of taking it and a lot of people want to lift the lid. These boxes aren't made to lift the lid. We just want to drag it.
Yeah.
Speed it up.
So he's basically got the weight of the box. Weight of the lid is the only weight there.
Yeah, we don't want to grab it. I've seen people grab it, and you see the knuckles start turning white. I'm like, hey, what's up?
It ain't gonna run off.
You got it. It ain't gonna go anywhere. You got it. And just.
Yeah, I've saved one other thing. I was talking about our first guest today, and he was so gifted at the pot call, but he actually. Like a true artist, he was running. You can't see this. So maybe we can show it on the TV part. He was, you know, he engages both hands. So people are grabbing the box call and just running the lid and forgetting about the other side. Yeah. Watch him run that call. He is working both sides very gently, though. But he's, see, watch his other hand, too. So he's actually using both hands.
Yeah, and you're exactly right. Like when a pot call sits in my hand and I'm running it 9 times out of 10. I'm not looking at it, but if I turn back, you can see that pot call. That's like a shock,
right?
Mm-hmm.
And me by not just same way with that box, not hardening up, you know, tensing my hand up. I'm not killing that call. I'm giving that call life by letting it lay there and do its thing. So the call.
So if a guy walks into Woods and Waters and wants to buy one of those box calls, how many does he have to go through to get one to sound that good? Now, be honest with us.
Well,
all of them do, Bobby. Come on.
I'll tell you this. On this type wood, and I'm giving a shout out to anybody that's using that. That is far as turning out boxes that aren't duds, and every call maker has duds. Very few turn out to be duds with this wood. Now, I have a pile of walnut and hickory.
Sycamore.
That stuff.
Poplar.
You can have 10, you know, that look beautiful. And then when we start the tuning process, you might have five that make it. And then it just depends on, you can't see it. It's one of those things you can't see why with your eye, because it's something to do with the wood. It's not the measurementation. It's not that. It's just you got into a spot where the wood's a little different.
So
that's high. That you can't beat that.
No, heck no. Yeah. But a question would be, and it's not really about what someone would shop for right there, but if you find a dud, is it typically the box or the lid? That's a bigger problem.
On what I've been doing with, like, say, walnut
and pecan,
it'll generally be the lid.
So you could you could take it off, put a new lid on it. Dudley, you want to try something, interchange the lids on some boxes.
I've got lids at my shop that are several different kinds, and a lot of times we'll try. When we were coming up with this box, I had like five or six different lids, and that every time it gravitated towards Purple Heart. Hmm. And it's just, you know.
So y'all tune these.
Your hands tune every one of them.
Yes, every one of them's tuned. Sometimes you'll find something where we might thin the inside of that box. It's not rolling over like I want it to.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we'll take a blade or a knife, and I'll start scraping that side. And what I'll do when we're tuning them, and I don't have time to sit there and scrape on it, I put that in the problem box over here. And then when I get time, I'll make a loop around, and I'll sit down, and I'll start working on boxes. I might get five or six of them done, and then I got to go do something else. But that's generally the yield of excellent working collars is very low with these two woods.
They sound good too.
That's awesome, y'all. Hand tuning.
Yeah, you know, a friction call, I can just about look at the wood, you know, when we're running pots, and I can just about tell you if it's going to be how I need to glue it up. I mean, there's different little tricks that we use, but anyway, and it's the same way, you know. But you can spot a dud. I can almost spot a dud on that.
On a pot call?
On a pot call by the wood grain on it.
Huh.
Yeah.
Is it wider or coarser?
If you get, we'll get some pots where you got a little too close to where a limb came into the trunk, and it gets a little swirly. It's dense. And, you know, the denser it is, it just doesn't resonate that on a friction call. Mm-hmm. It actually starts to kill it.
I got a pot call. I bought it at Woods and Waters many, many years ago. I think it's called a Dixie Hen.
Yeah.
It's one of your calls.
Yes, sir.
It sure sounds, I mean.
That is a walnut with a cherry laminates, and it is a very consistent call.
Is that a slate call?
It is. Yeah, it's a slate. It is
beautiful.
The Furminator is the industry's most versatile piece of food plot equipment, allowing plotters to do every step of the process, working the soil, adding seed and soil supplements, and compacting, from start to finish with a single implement. It's hassle-free by design. Set it for the seed size and simply drive the tractor, and the Furminator does the rest. Check it out at thefurminator.com.
Nosler is known for their bullets, and now they're making suppressors. Nosler suppressors are made for hunting. Adding a Nosler suppressor to your rifle will make you a quieter, more accurate, and more effective hunter. Protect your hearing and disturb less game with a Nosler suppressor. The time to hunt quiet is now. Learn more at Nosler.com.
If I lost it, I'd be sick.
Have you ever made a box with a slate?
Yeah.
Have anybody ever tried to make a slate?
I used to own one of those. It was my dad's, and it had a little square of slate in the middle of the lid.
Oh, wow.
And it was one-sided.
So, yeah.
And that's another one that I lost.
Do you have one, Bobby?
Bobby has one.
Bobby has one.
Where'd you get it from, Bobby?
So the story is.
Oh, goodness.
What's the truth, not the story?
25 years ago, I bought one at an NW. This guy, it was called Kicking Birds.
Yeah, that's right.
Kicking Birds.
And I bought one. I killed 20-something turkeys with it. Had marked.
Bobby, you killed 20-something turkeys your whole life.
I lost it. I chased a turkey.
I know where he lost it. We're still looking for it.
And I was so sick. I spent a whole day walking my
way. But you still have the one that I.
No, let me finish the story. So, yeah. But after I had bought it, Al Cheatham.
Yeah,
Loved the way it sounded. And
very dear friend.
In the next NWTF, I went and I bought him one and gave it to him. And so when he found out I lost mine, he gave me that one. But it doesn't sound near as good as the one I lost. But it's a slate paddle. And everybody looks at it.
So I was wondering how you could do that. Could you put slate on top of the box? Would it, would that one work? You'd have to go into the
yeah. See that box that Bobby's talking about. It is in inlaid, really, the sheet of it. And
I gotcha.
And to give it that curvature,
I bet that took some workmanship.
Look, I can't find them. I have. I have. We've looked everywhere for it.
Yeah.
Somebody bring it back.
Yeah. It was a great sounding call.
But you still have that one, right?
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. Remember, I gave.
Bobby gave me that box and wanted me to study it up, study on it. And I did. Mm-hmm. And I think I was in the middle of moving shops or something, and it got packed up. And look, it was all I thought I was kind of worried. I told Bobby, I said, look, I know it's here. I got to find it. Everything's fine. He was nice. But I knew that box meant a lot to him, and I finally found it. And it was like 6-7 months later when I found it. But I got it to him. But I saw one of those boxes on eBay. I know. I did. It was the same box car you had, Kicking Bird.
Yeah.
And it had just ended.
Wow.
It had just ended, and I thought about you. I was like, man, I bet Bobby would have loved to know that thing was on there.
Good sound, a little call, for sure.
Yeah.
But it was a slate box.
Yeah. And it was heavy. I think almost it was like this part of the body is that long.
Very deep.
Very deep. And it almost like felt like a piece of teak, you know, teak wood in your hand.
Yeah. So you're going to make a one-sided box for next year.
That's my plan.
Yeah. And so what would those same two woods?
That's where I'm going.
That's what I'll do. Count me in.
Yeah.
Got you.
I want to buy one.
Me too.
Yeah.
Look,
yeah.
Y'all be my first people.
Yeah, bring us 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6.
There you go.
and Bobby will buy them all for us as a Christmas present.
This year. Right.
Yep.
So do you ever do anything? Can you cackle on your box? Do you ever fool with that? I mean, it's pretty easy to cut on a box call.
Yeah, it's pretty easy to cut. I mean,
you can do a fly down, I know, because you pretty much did it.
You know, a fly down is just
beautiful.
You know, cackling, I remember growing up,
yeah,
my dad would say, you cackle, you know, and he'd go, yeah. I never do that anymore.
My dad did it all the time.
And when you just said that, you know, like the people I hunt with, I never hear them do that anymore. Mm-mm. I hear turkeys every once in a while.
I wonder why.
I don't know.
I cackle all the time.
I mean, that didn't come along.
I'm midday cackling.
Dudley's point, I mean, the time your dad was doing it was like some of the first people ever doing it. So it was a new sound.
But now you see people cut on them a lot, you know, where they put their thumb as a bumper and pop it.
Oh, yeah.
He was, you know, moving the lid really fast, you know, kind of a yelp note really fast.
And people, you know, they're just...
It's not easy
to
do.
It's like a fast yak.
It's really not a cackle. It's almost like a yelp.
Mm-hmm. Like a fast yelp. Yep. Excited yelp.
Exactly. But it seems like people don't do that very much like they used to.
And then I always used to pick the lid up between notes. And then I was actually at the Bass Pro headquarters when I was in junior high. And one of the salespeople came up to me and showed me how to keep it on the lid and slide it back and forth. And then he showed me that you can hold the lid between your two fingers.
Yeah.
Also.
Similar to what that's kind of the way I play it.
It's just if you're trying to do it easy and not mess up, and that always works well for me.
I tell you, Lyle, it's been interesting. I don't know what else to ask you. I know I kind of told you we'd love to hear one of your favorite turkey stories. Maybe you could tell us that, and if there's any more questions, we can think of them here.
I tell you, you know – I guess one of the most, and he's a prior guest, was calling up a turkey for George.
Mm-hmm.
And it really wasn't for George. It was, as George put it to me, he said, this is your hunt. And I didn't know George that well at that time. And we were hunting some turkeys that were roosted off some water right there. And I didn't know George that well at that point. In time and anyway, he's kind of pushing me along, and he leaned over and I was kind of hesitant about, you know, pushing on like I would do turkey hunt, but he assured me, hey, you do it, you play it like you want to play it. And I was like, okay. And anyway, I must have played it right. I yipped up these turkeys, and I killed this turkey, and turkey's out there flopping, and I just kind of kept calling. I remember this dirt mound. It was about from from, I guess maybe from me to you, Bobby. And I'm pointed this way. George is right there. And it was like a periscope. I don't know how that turkey came to me after I kept calling. And but anyway, I can remember I just looked, and this turkey head just starts coming up over this hump of dirt. And George is there, and I'm like, there he is right there, George. And George turned around, and I mean, I don't know how he hit him. I mean, he's from me to you. It's like that. And I mean, ear holding. I had a hole in it. And I was sitting there with George and just kind of going over the hunt. And George's always been somebody that's always pushed me. Like, once we got to be friends with the cause, you know, keep pushing. Don't worry about what people think. Just keep rolling. You keep do right. Be a good person. Keep rolling. And anyway, George told me, he said, you know, he said, there's not too many people that's ever called up turkeys for me. And I thought that was a cool thing coming from him, because I imagine a lot of people didn't call turkeys up for him. He was always taking care of somebody else, you know, as a guide and whatnot. And there's a bunch of them. And I've always liked George. George's always been a close friend. And the one thing about it, the hunts I've been on George, they've always been like something funny about him, something off the wall. And, I actually called a turkey off George one morning for a guy named Steve Bowman, that was with BASS, and Steve had a blue Bassmaster hat on his head when he killed him. It's always something funny with it. So, that's one of my favorites. I could go on and on about
favorites. Bobby's called a few turkeys off George too.
I know.
They've been neighbors for a very long time.
Yeah. I know y'all have. George called me one time. He was stuck back there at the back of that place. I was thinning.
When you're stuck on the south end of that place, you are stuck.
Well, I walked in from that dirt road to get to help him. I walked all the way to the back. He was hung up on a stump, and I was like, I was pretty strong. I was like, we'll get that ranger off of it. I'm sure we can get that. Mm-mm. I had to walk all the way back out. I did. I was thinning timber down the road there for AGC, right there, forestry background and stuff. But anyway, he's a mess. I knew y'all were neighbors.
Yeah, he's quite a interesting guy to talk about turkeys.
Yeah, that's neat. He was interested in seeing how you did it.
He was. He was kind of testing me in the woods, you know, and I was nervous. I'm not going to tell you a lie. I was nervous. I mean, he's taking me there on this place, and then he leans over and says, pushes me kind of on the back and says, it's your hunt.
Do it your way.
Yeah, I thought that was a unique thing to say. I've never, like, it makes me think about my child, my son, mm-hmm. and want to just say, hey, it's time for you to, let's watch you do it, not me do it.
Exactly. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So that's what it stuck out to me, I guess, is a unique thing.
You got kids?
I do. I have two.
Are they interested in hunting?
Oh yeah, sir. My stepson, his grandparents are from Scuba, so he's always turkey hunting around Scuba there. And then I've got one that's 17 years old. He's ready to turkey hunt. He's been going by himself and scouting and walking. So. You know, he's ready. I'm looking forward to it. I'm actually going to get to take him to Florida. So
nice.
Quick trip, but yeah. It'll be fun.
Ain't nothing like hunting. That's right.
I love hunting with kids. Anyway.
Oh yeah.
Speaking of, that just made me. I've never asked this, Toxie, but was there a day when you like? I'll just say Neil. Did you say okay? You can go by yourself today.
Yeah, there was. Actually, he took to it a little younger than Daniel, and we both all knew it. And so we were all staying in the other little cabin we have up there in Sumter County. And I said, you know, because I knew he was just going to walk from the cabin. He wouldn't wait for him to get off lost or anything. He was always good with directions, but he might have been 9, 10 maybe. He might not have been 9, 10. I hate to say it. He was by himself. Probably shouldn't have been. People don't get mad at me. But anyway, I went for a drive with Daniel and called up a turkey. Daniel killed. And when we got back, Neil had called up a turkey by himself and killed it.
That's awesome.
Yep.
Look, that's funny. You're talking about had was good with direction.
Mm-hmm.
That 17-year-old, oh man, he got lost in a 10-acre patch of woods one time. I'm gonna throw him under the bus right here anyway because I love him. I said, "Where are you at, son?" He said, "I'm down here on this creek somewhere in this cedar thicket." And I was like, "Well, you can't be far. It's an 80-acre, but it had a 10-acre patch of timber and brush around it, you know." I said, "You just stand still and honk the horn." And I honked the horn, and I heard it come back, reverberate through his phone into my. That is the true story. I said, "I just heard my own horn come through the phone." He goes, "Well, I don't know where I'm at." I'm like, "You can't be but right here in front of me. Can you not see my light?" Says, "Man, that was a good one."
That's hilarious.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
He's a mess.
I still took it carefully. You know, that was absolutely, you know, walk across the lake now, stay right there. You know, surely it'd be one.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But it's something to be careful about.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's a day though when the kid gets to that age.
Yeah, but I mean,
I'm getting close.
But
mine.
You know, this is the place we own. This wasn't even a lease or something, so
yeah,
it was totally safe. You know, when you get up, you're hunting a place with other people on it or public land or something. That's a whole different story.
That's right. Yeah.
They need to be old enough to be driving their own car and be very practiced and whatever. You can't be too careful with it, Bobby. But you know, they're different. They're all different.
That was a different
time frame too. Than
I wasn't. And look, I wasn't in a hurry at all. I wish they would. And my most fun hunts today are either have been, you know, Daddy can't go really anymore, but it's going with them. I mean, that's my favorite hunts are with my kids or with my dad. But that was just because that I could let them both go still.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah, that's how it should be.
Yeah. Yeah, I was lucky. My dad always let me. He never told me no. That's why I love turkey hunting. Yeah, we went turkey hunting every chance we could get. School. Whatever.
I killed my first turkey I caught up was in Sumter County, not down at the bluff, but Daddy and Uncle Bud, one morning they were going hunting on the back of the property back there where Chris and Piggy live now. And they just dropped me off. I remember Daddy had his old Bronco, little old short Broncos they made back then. They just dropped me off and walked to the back of that big pasture. And, you know, there should be one down there somewhere. And the turkey gobbled. And I fooled with him all morning long. I never moved at the time. I mean, I had the old lead yepper, just yep, nothing in my arsenal but a hen yep. And finally, he just quit gobbling. And so I just sat there. And so I'm going to get up. They said, and I forgot I had, you know, everybody had a watch back then. They said they would pick me up at 10 o'clock. I better get back up and leave. And so I called a couple times, and he didn't gobble. He'd been gobbling for a while. And I was just fixing to get up. I look from a total opposite direction. Here he came out of that pasture, and he walked down the hill. I killed him. And I was the most prouder than when I shot my first one with him or anything. That's the proudest I may have ever been.
It's a big step.
It is a big deal.
Yeah,
it really is.
Yeah.
And he said, just like he did before, he said, "Son, when a young man is old enough to go out on his own and take game for the family, it's the first big step from a boy becoming a man."
Mm-hmm.
And it's just like an old Western movie or something, but he told me that. And
I bet you was puffed up.
Yep.
Yeah, that's
I was very puffed up.
Yeah.
He was puffed up.
I'm getting close. So.
Well, Lyle, we appreciate you coming over.
Yeah.
Thank y'all for having me.
We're real proud of Houndstooth. You guys hear good things.
Well, thank you. We appreciate y'all's support. All of Moss.
I think y'all need to get Bobby a Houndstooth hat to wear.
You know, I'm not opposed to it.
No, I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about the sure enough Houndstooth.
I probably
wouldn't do that.
Fedora, maybe one of those Houndstooth fedoras.
Oh, he'd look good in that.
Bobby, I tell you, we'll make a bet and I'll wear, you know, something that looks like Auburn. I went to Mississippi State, but I just know how it wears on Bobby, so.
Oh, no. Well, so Kerry Wicks, does he really sound that good on a mouth call?
I know. He sure feels like
he's pretty good on a mouth call now. He's a good turkey hunter.
Hit it, Kerry.
The KB
The only thing when Kerry started turkey hunting with me, he goes, "I don't know how you hunting this thick stuff."
Yeah.
Because I can remember Kerry.
That's the truth.
There was a turkey gobbling. Kerry was trying to get settled down. He had his camera equipment. And, man, those old sawbriars were getting a hold of every little old thing hanging off, you know. And it is. It's totally different regions where we hunt a lot.
Yeah.
But
a lot of that stuff in Tennessee is just, you know, closed canopy hardwoods.
Hey, he's educated on turkeys and what they do why they do it. I mean, that's why he gets those pictures.
I think it's easier where it's thicker. Myself?
Yeah, you had to come around the corner. Yeah, and see
you've got to.
They got to come look.
You've got an advantage. You can paint a picture to him there, and he'll walk into a trap.
You catch one in a wide open park looking spot, woods, that's the hardest thing there is.
Yep. So, would you do us a favor and let us know when Kerry's going to be in Alabama so that we just give us a heads up?
Give y'all heads up.
You mean so we can avoid him or so we can what, Bobby?
Just pay attention.
That's right. We just got to pay attention.
Pay attention.
Well, look, I'm exhausted. It's been a long day.
Well, you brought it on, dude.
I did. I am.
Hey, but we're real lucky. All these guys are in town, you know, for the thing at the store. So, and the film tonight. So we appreciate y'all being here and being in the studio.
We're gonna have to get together and talk about that next week.
Yeah, we will.
Bonus time.
All right, Lyle Gilbert, Houndstooth Calls. We really appreciate you being here. You sound fantastic on a box call.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. I appreciate it.
Really do.
Thank y'all for having me.
It's
our pleasure. Why don't you say goodbye, Dudley?
Goodbye, Dudley.
Tune in to this week's episode of the Gamekeeper Podcast, and be sure to tune in again. Subscribe to Gamekeeper Farming for Wildlife Magazine, and don't miss the Mossy Oak Properties Fistful of Dirt Podcast with my good buddy, Ronnie Cuz Strickland.